Hello, everyone. This is your host, Wesley Schmalz, and I'm bringing in live another episode of Darren is Dead and Wes is Somewhere Else. With me, as always, is our handsome co-host, Darren Stone.
Hi.
As you can tell, Darren is very much dying today. Yeah, the life support just isn't working anymore. We're going to have to pull the plug. He is also turning into a gremlin. I guess somebody fed him after midnight. But all bad jokes aside, how are you doing today, Darren?
I'm doing all right. I've neglected my duty as a film person and ignored some opportunities. I don't know. Yeah. I mean, they weren't like... quit your job and work at Marvel sort of things. They were just more like PA weekend sort of hold a poll for, 7 hours in the middle of Tuesday.
Yeah. I can see why you wouldn't want to accept that.
How have you been doing film-wise?
Film-wise, I've been doing okay. I've actually had a coworker who's been approaching me many times. He wants to film something together or try to get together and start doing some some skits. And I haven't really had the energy to start up on that yet, but I'm trying to free up some time in my schedule next month to hopefully do that.
Wes, come on!
And then I've been slowly getting back into writing.
Awesome.
I've been working on this concept I had that popped back into my head that I really wanted to work on. So I've been kind of while at work, just brainstorming ideas for that. And then when I get home, write down a couple footnotes on those ideas or try to go for a whole page. That kind of dealio. For today's episode of the podcast, we decided that we talk about a film that came out a little while ago. I think we meant to actually talk about this film last time we recorded an episode, but just ran out of time, and there were many other things we had to do. But we're going to talk about Jordan Peele's newest movie, Us. Us was just an elaborate retelling of Friday the 13th. You didn't know that?
Yeah, what's initial thoughts?
I enjoyed it. I didn't like it as much as Get Out, though.
Well, yeah. I feel like the zeitgeist pretty much is like everyone went to this movie because of Get Out, and everyone was sad that it wasn't as hard-hitting and it wasn't as simple of a concept.
Yeah. I walked into the film. I had talked to a couple people before. I didn't talk to anybody about spoilers or stuff such as that. But everybody had kind of the same opinion of, yeah, watch it. It's good. It's really good, but it's not as good as Get Out. Or it's really good, but it doesn't seem to hold up as well as Get Out does. And so I tried to walk into the theater, with this not necessarily unbiased opinion, I guess. I try to walk in being as open as possible. Just hey, he did fantastic with Get Out. I'm sure everyone seems to be loving this. I'm sure it'll be good. I don't want to get too hyped up for it. And I really wasn't. I could tell right away though that the trailers were giving away too much.
I didn't. I stayed away and just walked in the movie. I wasn't influenced by any sort of promotion or commercial, just because I really wanted to walk in there with a new movie. And I did the same thing with Get Out. I walked in with more of a fresh perspective because I was unaware of Jordan Peele really when I went to Get Out. But this was you knew how good Get Out was, so you really wanted to be fresh in your mind for what this was going to be. And I would say the first half I thought, like, wow, this is really cool. And I don't know, just like hitting the second act when you kind of realize, like, oh, so it's a world. Once it expanded from the microscopic to the macroscopic, it really mm-hmm. lost some of its flavor.
Oh, yes. I agree wholeheartedly. Like,
do people care about spoilers?
It's been out for, like, what, 2 months now? All right. I'm pretty sure no one cares about spoilers at this point. Either they have seen it or they've moved on completely.
Plus, yeah, our audience is us.
That's true. But anyway, like, yeah. I will say, you know, you and I, we both saw Get Out together opening night. And Get Out, that still remains one of my favorite movie-going experiences, you know? Like, it's one of the very few times I felt were in the theater. Like, I was incredibly invested in the film. The whole entire audience was, you know, everyone wasn't, like, there wasn't anybody doing anything annoying. There was nobody, like, you know, whispering to each other. There was no, like, super loud popcorn munchers. Everybody was basically in tune with each other, hitting the same kind of beat, if you will. You know, everyone was reacting the same way to things happening on the screen. It was by far one of my favorite movie-going experiences, you know? I absolutely loved it. So I tried walking into this, being like, okay, you know, Get Out, fantastic movie-going experience, fantastic film. Let's just go into this, you know, be calm, be reserved, and let's see how it goes. And I... just like you, you know, that first half of the film was really good. I thought it was great, you know. I love the kind of mystery and suspense we got. But as soon as, like, I want to say for me, as soon as they left the house, and you're right, as soon as it went from micro to, like, macro, everything really went downhill with the plot.
Well, it's explainability of it. Get Out, is it believable that... you know, there are, you know, black people or actually white people, you know? Well, if it's a corner, if it's a tiny pocket of people, you know, yeah, like in northern Vermont.
Yeah, it's not like this is a conspiracy affecting everybody in the entire United States.
Like, yeah.
Watching us, the more they tried to explain, you know, it's a lot like with a bad monster movie or with, like, a, you know, a disappointing monster movie in which they explain too much of the monster that you no longer really care.
I wouldn't say that. I would say it's a box that gets bigger the more you go, the more you take away. It's like, it answers questions, but the questions that it answers...
just bring up more questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, the whole time, just like, okay, so they have, you know... they've basically created a clone of every single person, but the clones are living underground.
Every single person. The government cloned every single person.
I mean, it was great when it was just the family, but then they moved to it being like the whole city of Santa Cruz. And then it moved from the whole city of Santa Cruz to the entire United States. And it's just like, what the fuck? Like, I remember sitting there in the theater as I'm watching the film, and sure, I'm paying attention. But at the same time, in the back of my head, I'm just like, okay, so they have a clone of every single person. These clones are now on the surface killing not only the person that they're a clone of, but literally just anybody that they know is not a clone. And also, say, like, her husband wasn't from Santa Cruz, you know? So that means they have another facility underneath the city wherever he's from. That could be in another state for all we know. How did his clone from that facility get over to her fucking clones facility, you know?
Yeah, and the whole thing,
like,
was
how did, is there a tunnel that literally connects all these facilities underground across the entire United States? It's like, who's feeding them the rabbit? You know, how are they breeding all these fucking rabbits to feed the clones? How are they able to copy the exact movements? And, like, do the tunnels match the city streets perfect? It, the more you think about it, the less and less it makes sense. And while, you know, it's, people will just say, oh, it's a movie, you're just thinking too much into it, oh, just, you know, turn off your brain and enjoy the ride, I can't. The movie keeps, the movie constantly wants me to think about these things, you know? And this was like, I think, you know, the main character's clone, in quotations, you know, I think the main character's copy or tether, even said that it was the government's, like, it was a government operation to get, like, to control people or something. I swear she said that or hinted at that when, like, the tethered family first gets introduced to your actual family. And then to think about all the tunnel systems underground, how do they have all these facilities underground that aren't affecting with, like, subway systems, with sewer systems? Like, it makes sense if it's just one isolated facility underneath the boardwalk.
But that was the explanation, too, why there was no emergency services, was that everyone, the government was going to be like, hey, fire department, don't go here because that's where we're having our little tethered people, you know.
Did they actually say something in the film about, like, you know, no emergency teams or cops?
No, that was just someone's assumption. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I've already said, you know, first part of the film, fantastic. I loved it. But then from there on, I thought it started to really go downhill. Like, that final shot, you know, with the helicopter going over the hill and you see everybody, like, all the clones linking their arms together. I absolutely hated that. Like, it just, for me, represented, like, all the questions that you and I just had together. It just represented all of the, just like, of, like, the plot of the film. It almost, like, felt like it was trying to be like, oh, but there's more to this story, or, oh, the story will continue on, in a sense. And it's just, like, it kind of ruined anything of, like, any satisfaction of the ending we got, or, like, of the ending with the main character and her family. I feel like the film really should have just cut right, like, as the mom, you know, looked at her son and they're staring at each other and then they go back to the road. I think it should have then cut there. Boom, perfect ending. Good, you know. Family lived through shit, but the family's still together. They still love each other. You know, they conquered that and they're going to keep going forward.
Have you ever been like watching a movie where there's two people and then there's the, oh, we don't know, you know. They fought each other, and we don't know, you know, at the end. And then they do a little wink like, oh, is that them or is that the other? Who knows? Mm-hmm. Have you ever been like, ooh, or has it always just been, ugh?
I think they kind of tried to do that with Alien Covenant.
And
you know how much I fucking hate that.
I'm saying, is there an example of this sort of trope that you can point out that's like, yeah, when, you know, I wasn't sure, and then at the end, I was, you know, it just was awesome. Or is it just one of these tropes that's like, okay.
Basically, you know? Essentially a trope where, like, you're unsure if the things that you're seeing are, like, the truth or... That's what you're getting at. Yeah.
Yeah, there's two of one person and you're not sure who is the original.
Yeah, two of one person, you're not sure who the original is? That I can't think of off the top of my head. I mean, I can give you like an Alien Covenant example. I can't really think of many films with two of the same person or that I've seen. There's probably tons of them out there, but...
The Sixth Day?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
But yeah, it's definitely a trope, and I don't know. I'm sure, like, Get Out too, there's tropes in that. It wasn't a wholly original. It was just so flawless and being so small and believable that you just kind of wrote off some of the, you know, I may have seen the whole brain swapping, or I may have seen the whole secret family, you know, in a movie before, mm-hmm. but it was just so well done that you weren't saying during the movie, do we have to actually watch through this? Well, it's like, was that the original Adelaide?
Like, I felt the ending of Us was very dissatisfying.
And but that beginning. Mostly...
What?
The beginning with the carnival or the mm-hmm. fair.
Yeah.
That was, I don't know, atmospheric. Like, I feel like atmosphere is really what all horror movies are about. You know, you have a concept, but once you get too heavy into a concept, it people groan and people go, ugh. Mm-hmm. Just because it's like, okay, explain Freddy Krueger. Okay, so a guy infiltrates your dreams. Okay, but how? You know, once you reach the how, it's like, how did a child murderer just happen to get the power after he died to, you know, kill people, you know, in their subconscious?
You could say, he, because of, you know, his desire for revenge was so strong, or, you know.
Yeah.
You could use excuses like that, and it's just like, okay, yeah, that's serviceable, whatever, continue on with the movie. Or you could say, because his death was so gruesome and horrible that he came back as something gruesome and horrible, you know? It felt like with us, you know, with Get Out, there was a lot of little hidden things, or like, you know, little nods to the plot and such that, like, were hidden in the background or just, like, barely mentioned in character dialogue that you could easily miss, and then you'd pick him up on, you know, on repeat viewings. With this one, I didn't really feel like there was anything such as that, you know. Again, because I had seen Get Out, I walked into this being like, okay, I need to pay attention to what's going on, as well as what's in the background, what kind of things he could be implying here and there. So, you know, I'm trying my hardest to pay attention to not only the characters, but everything around them. One of the biggest, most repeated things in the film was the Bible quote.
11:11.
Yeah, 11:11. Which me and my buddies, we looked up after we had watched the film. Like, we spent a good time talking about the film, and all of us were just like pretty much the same opinion as I, confused. Like, it was good, it was great, you know, we recommend people go see it, but the ending half just leaves you so kind of confused, it takes you out of the film. Like, we looked it up in the Bible quote, you know, happened to mention about, like, God bringing, raining down upon the earth tethers or something. And it's just like, okay, so he's constantly wanting to, he's constantly bringing up that quote, even though the quote's never actually mentioned, just the phrase tethers of people. It felt like, you know, was this the Bible quote that gave him inspiration for the plot? Was it, you know, did he just happen to find this while thinking up of ideas how to make his plot work? I don't know. Is it supposed to tie into a kind of doomsday feeling that you're supposed to get with the ending? It just felt like with this film, you know, there wasn't really... I guess what I'm trying to say is this film felt like it was trying to be smarter than it really was.
I want to say that. I would just say that it overcomplicates what could... Like, if it had just remained in the singular family, or yes, even the town, I feel like that's a lot of, like, name a horror movie, and it's usually not global, because mm-hmm. global movies, well, production, but the second thing is that the believability, you know, you walk
goes out the window.
Yeah. Like, name a horrible thing that could happen to, you know, Durnsville, Indiana, and a
chemical spill, boom.
And name a weird thing that could happen during a chemical spill.
Toxic cloud of gas is formed that is slowly creeping throughout the neighborhood and can't be contained.
Yeah, you could believe that. You could believe that. You read in the Washington Post that, you know, there's a chemical cloud in Durnsville, Indiana, because, you know, of some reason. But if you say there's a toxic cloud over the universe, then it's like, well, what? It raises too many doubts, too much unbelievability. And then it brings
the question, well, how did this happen globally so quickly without anybody, you know, stopping it, or anybody, like, you know, trying to help another country, give a warning, if you will? Like, you know, I think back to all, like, you know, the prime example, horror movies. They're always of just, like, this thing's happening in a contained area. We can't let it get out.
And one girl got out. One little tethered.
Yeah. What made... I remember being furious about this. I remember being like, what... How was she able to break away from everyone else who was still tethered and controlled? You know, what made her fucking special? How was she able to knock everyone out of their kind of tethered control? You know, how was she able to get them to stop completely mimicking everybody on the surface? How,
plot, if this
was
the
case, how was the government not stopping this, you know? Were none of the fucking tether units under control? I didn't see any cameras in there. There's no, like, you know, government worker and they're just like, hey, go back to copying them.
Do we stop her?
Or just... she's going to the surface. It's not like, oh no, she ran into, oh no, did she swap places? I guess we'll never know.
Hey, you gotta help me. You gotta get me out of here. I don't know. Like,
did you think that her and like the tether swapping places with the real girl, didn't you think that was super obvious too?
Mm-hmm. As I said, is there ever a case of the switch of, you know, changing a character out for their duplicate that has ever been at all a revelation or a surprise?
In The Simpsons Treehouse of Horror, when it's revealed that Bart was the evil clone the whole time?
Ah.
Oh! God, yeah. I mean, this film didn't aggravate me like Bird Box when we talked about that. I mean, I still enjoyed this movie.
Oh.
Don't make me start up about Bird Box again. Wes's Scams. So, for a scam corner today, I have had a little something different. Not like talking about outright scams, if you will. So, the past week, or at least especially the past like 3 or 4 days, I've been spending a lot of time on Amazon Prime watching a lot of movies on Prime Video. Darren, you're very familiar with Prime Video service.
Sure.
You know, it's essentially, you know, like any other kind of streaming service. They have movies on there. With Prime Video, like they have a ton of movies that you can rent, but they also have a pretty decently sized catalog of movies that are available for free with your Prime subscription.
Listeners of the podcast will remember. So I think a big thing too with Prime Video is they take up a lot of indie material. I talked about going to a different podcast where they were talking about like the writer for Patriot got on there and he said his biggest worry was no one's going to see it. And that's an advantage and, you know, drawback. Or the biggest disappointment from a service that picks up a lot of indie material is that you're more likely to actually get onto a huge streaming service, but a lot less, you know, plausible likely that someone's going to watch your stuff.
Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm getting to. So, yeah, as Darren pointed out, with Prime Video, they've been picking up a lot of indie stuff. You know, they also have their originals, which are probably the things they're most known for. But Prime Video has a ton, and I mean a ton of, you know, what I would call straight-to-DVD schlock. There's a lot of movies that I found on there that I actually grew up watching on the Sci-Fi Channel on Saturdays during their, you know, movie marathons. A lot of, like, you know, mostly schlocky horror movies or, like, some action movies as well. And as I was watching one the other day, like, for example... The other day, I was really in the mood to watch, like, a really shitty dinosaur movie. And, of course, you know, Amazon Prime has some, and they were recommending me a bunch. And I click on, I'm going to talk about two in particular. So, the first one was called Triassic World. Now, it was made by The Asylum. Darren, you're familiar with The Asylum. And for those of you who don't know, The Asylum, they're very notorious in the film world because they make a lot of straight-to-DVD or straight-to-streaming service movies, very, like, low-budget, you know. And they always, like, title their productions in a very manner very similar to a triple-A Hollywood production release at the time. For example, you know, Hollywood's releasing Transformers, The Asylum tries to... quickly release
right Transmorphers.
Before. Yes, Transmorphers right before Transformers releases to kind of like confuse people. Really hit that like, you know, elderly crowd that'll be like, ah, Transmorphers, that's the film that Billy was talking about. This movie's terrible.
Turns out Wes is ageist.
I'm not ageist, I'm just realistic, okay?
I just hate old people.
So, yeah. So, I watched Triassic World. I didn't know it was an Asylum picture until I booted it up. But, so the plot of that one is, like, you know, It's a government facility that was like breeding dinosaur. It was cloning dinosaurs to be hosts for human organs, so those human organs could be then used to transplant into sick dying patients to save their lives.
Hmm.
That's the big premise in the summary of the film when you click on it, you know? When you watch it, you realize it literally has nothing to do with that, and it's just shot in some some office building that was empty for the day. And I will give them props. They actually had a pretty decent dinosaur puppet chasing them around. It was pretty cool, you know. It was like a kind of decently sized and movable. They knew how to shot around it, so like you didn't spend too much time on it and be like, oh. But the CG dinosaur still looked awful. And it's just like the whole time watching it, you know, there's no characters to be invested in. The plot starts to make less and less sense. You see all these themes that are like very familiar with like Aliens or with like other films that have come way before that are more famous. And part of me can't help but wonder if just like, where do they get these scripts? Do they actually hire writers, or do they just like, you know, shuffle through like a scrap bin?
Do they just have an AI machine that they turn on?
The screenwriting machine? Okay, Billy, type in dinosaur. All right. And then tap 3 times. Okay, we have a script. And it's also funny, too, because, like, you know, they have those lines of dialogue that reference the actual movie. Like, you know, they had a throwaway line of just like, oh, now we have laws enforcing the cloning of dinosaur, because every time that there's an accident at one of those amusement parks, the laws get stricter. And it's just like, when I hear dialogue lines like that in these low-budget movies, I just roll my eyes. I'm just like, I get it. You know, you're not that movie, but you're not being clever. It almost comes off as kind of smug, just like, why watch that movie when you could watch this one? I think they had a line like that on the cover box for Carnosaur.
You idiot. You watch Jurassic Park? That's
a cat. Oh, wait, no, it was in the trailer for Carnosaur, yeah. It was in the trailer and the film for Carnosaur. It would make one decent park. Something like that. So, yeah, Jurassic World, you know, it was dumb. It was like the beginning of it was Aliens, and then it moves into just kind of like just stupid shit. And then, mainly wanted to bring that up because I wanted to talk about the Asylum Pictures, you know, and all that. The next film I'm going to talk about actually made me pretty angry. So another thing I want to bring up is that a lot of the schlock movies that you find on Amazon Prime, as I brought up earlier, I noticed this as I was going through them. Most of them barely make movie length. Almost every single one is just like barely past 60 minutes. And I still think a good, excuse me, I still think a good like 10 minutes or like, you know, 7 minutes of that is taken up by like end credits. Or opening credits. So, like, most of these movies are barely past an hour and, like, barely, because, you know, I think, wasn't it taught to us in film school or you and I just had a universal rule? Yeah, I think this was when you and I were trying to do a script together for that horror screenwriting competition, in which that, like, you know, a film, what makes it feature length is at least 90 minutes.
Remember from watching good old Red Letter Media, thanks guys, that people lengthen the, you can, for the movie, the credits count if there's something playing. So if you have like a little video or some, you know, or animation, then it counts as runtime. But if you don't, I don't think that usually credits factor.
So like, again, all these are listed with runtime.
80 minutes is the...
I always thought it was 90 minutes, but...
I remember people got mad, you know, when movies used to, you know, ride that, like an hour and 20, whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, you pay the same thing for Endgame.
Yeah, which is like 3+ hours long. But anyway, this is getting beyond the point. So back to where I was going. second movie I watched was called Killersaurus. And again, you know, it had an amazing poster on the surface. And like, I know, don't judge a thing by its poster. And I even watched the trailer for it beforehand. And the thing looks extremely low budget. Like, it looked awful. And I was like, you know what? I'm in the mood for a really shitty movie. Why not? Let's do this. I got like time to kill kind of thing. Load it up. And it's barely an hour. First of all, it's barely an hour. It's I guess it was a British production. And oh, Jesus Christ. It basically only had like three actors in it in the entire film. And it's shot, and I swear to God, someone's like abandoned warehouse or like, you know, the back of some kind of like shipping building or something, wherever they had a roll-up door. And the movie's just so insulting because, you know, it's like a, I guess the premise is like some, again, another government facility or government program that was trying to like, you know, develop something for life-saving medical research. They just happen to clone a fucking dinosaur from it. You know, like, they spend like, I swear to God, 20 minutes in the opening of just like, you know, the test sequence or whatever that results in cloning this T-Rex. But like, what was also fucking hilarious was like on the computer screens, you know, they have these like pop-ups on their computer of just like, you know, initiate test sequence, press yes or no. And like, I noticed this right away instead of like being, you know, all right, Darren. Say you're working on a movie, okay, and you know, you have a scene where like it's heavily focused on a computer screen and like you know, programs opening or launching, doing computer program binary shit on the screen. You know, how would you do that? Would you A, you know, hire someone in post-production to create like a small animatic or like kind of animation, whatever, that would play on the screen and get overlaid in, you know, post-production while editing? Would you be, you know, just find some any kind of generic looking science program or like a thing that you could pull up while shooting the film, you know, just have the actor like click two things, just tell them what buttons to press and, you know, that'll just glance at it really super quick and then move on. Or would you C, create image pictures that you would then open up in a photo viewer on your computer screen and just hit the next arrow so it just goes to the next picture, which is the next sequence of... Obviously, A, you would go with it's a post-production, you know, you would hire someone to do like a CG thing, you know, just a very simple short animation, or even if you were desperate enough or you're a low-budget film, just do like, you know, find a program or whatever that like would look run and look kind of sciencey, or better yet, just don't even shoot the computer screen. These people fucking made images of like of fake like window programs of like science programs and were just like they weren't showing them clicking on the keyboard, but you could hear them of just simply pressing like the next arrow key to load up the next image. And this probably sounds like the stupidest nitpick, but just noticing that, oh God, I thought it was hilarious. It just goes to show how low of a budget this film is. And they had the money to do an animation thing. They had this repeating animation of this, like, science laser that clones the fucking dinosaur repeating every, like, 5 minutes. Why do that? Why do? Like, don't even see the dinosaur for the most part. They have, like, this T-Rex model that's stationary the whole time that they'll, like, maybe do a quick, like, cut to, but it's, like, in a room that's super fucking foggy. You could barely even see it. Like... it's shot so poorly you can't even see, like, you know, it's like basically looking at like a black shadow the entire time. I can just barely tell that it's an actual kind of dinosaur model. And like before the film can even pick up anything, it just immediately ends. And like they don't even fight the T-Rex or kill the T-Rex or anything. You know, it just happens to open the garage door all the way while there's like, you know, some soldier guy that enters the room. It's just like, I'm going to take your research. But then the garage door opens and it's like, ah, the T-Rex is loose. What do we do? Let's just leave. That's literally what they do. Let's just leave. They leave the building and I guess it's supposed to be implied that it destroys the building and then that's it. You title your movie Killersaurus and the dinosaur just kills like one person? And not even in a creative way? Like,
what's the point of making a dinosaur movie if you're not going to do anything, you know, dinosaur related? If you're not going to be creative with the dinosaur kills, if you're not going to have fun with it. This was like the lowest low of a movie, or like of movie making, if you ask me. It's just like, it screams of like, I'm being forced to make a dinosaur movie, but I don't have ideas for a dinosaur movie. So let's just make an hour long of two people just talking in a control room and then end the film.
Hey, people make like indie movies, and it's like, hey, you can make something when you have $200. Here's more, you know?
This is just me being a dick today, but... I mean, I'm
a prime example.
I'm not saying that the videos for free on Prime are only awful shit. Like, you know, I was also rewatching The Ghost in the Darkness. I find that film very fantastic. I love it. I watched, for the first time, I fully watched Bad Moon, which is a great werewolf B movie. Have you ever seen Bad Moon?
No.
You should watch it. It's cool. It's like a, it's actually really short. It's only like 79 minutes. But basically, it's like about a family dog that has to protect his family from a werewolf in the area. The werewolf prop is pretty cool, but there's a really bad CG transformation. But he's good. Also, watch Ghost in the Darkness. That movie's awesome. Well, everyone, it seems like we're reaching that time. We're going to go ahead and call the podcast here for now. Darren, is there anything you would like to say in, as we part with our audience?
John Wick 3!
Hell yeah, bro! That's 17th, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I gotta really make sure my schedule's open to go see it. Gonna watch some people get shot in the face and beat with a stick. But yeah, anyway... Thank you all for tuning into another episode of Darren is Dead and Wes is Somewhere Else. This is Wes and Darren signing you out. Goodbye.
Bye.